Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. And guess what, cats and kittens? This show marks 19 full years finished up on the air. You Bet Your Garden debuted on October 3rd of 1998 when Bill Clinton was president. We're not going to celebrate now, but get ready for next year. We're going to have a great time. We're also going to have a great time today. Coming up later in the show, we're going to discuss what to do with late-season weeds that have gone to seed, a problem many of you are probably facing. But mostly, we're going to take your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Susan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Susan. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. Just a little bit perplexed about a tree that I want to plant in my front yard.
And where is perplexed Susan and her tree?
Downingtown, Pennsylvania.
Oh, sure.
Outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, very nice area. What can we do for you about your tree?
Okay, well, we lost a Bradford pear.
Oh, good.
You're in complete agreement with us, especially my husband. It was a great shade tree, and it was probably 20, 25 feet tall. So our question is, we'd like to get the perfect tree, of course. We have a pretty small front yard. Where the stump was ground down, we decided is basically the best and probably the only spot.
Whoops.
And that's
oops.
Yeah.
Oops.
Oh, is that the first big oops?
Oops. Yeah, the stump was ground down. That means there's still a giant plug in the bathtub.
Ah, okay.
You can't.
So he may not have gone far enough.
The stump is still underground. There's Charlie Weaver to block right where you intend to plant your new tree. You're not going to plant it in soil. You think you're going to plant it into the heart of the old stump?
Oh, no. We were under the impression that it was ground down to the point where there wasn't any stump left.
That would have to be a couple of feet.
Oh, okay. Okay. So how far away from that would you recommend?
What I generally advise in situations like this, because when a stump is ground down a little bit, there's nothing left to grab onto. So it's much harder to now pull the stump. Generally, you pull it by whacking at it with a backhoe, the top part, until you get it all out of the ground. But you got nothing left to whack. So generally, in a situation like this, what I recommend is you build a big boxed out raised bed on top and use that to grow something using the space between the top of the raised bed and the top of the stump. That way you rectify a mistake. And it looks like you did it deliberately. You mostly want the shade in the summer, right?
Right. We get a lot of sun, and we sure miss that shade.
Okay. You want to hear the craziest idea anyone on any gardening show will ever give you?
Sure.
Make the box really big and plant either sweet corn or popcorn in it every spring. That's like the fastest growing crop you can imagine. You can find varieties that will grow 10 feet tall that will provide a lot of shade. And then you either get to harvest sweet corn for a couple of weeks in the season or popcorn at the end of the season. And then you got ready-made Halloween and Thanksgiving decorations for the fall. And you can plant pansies in it after you pull the corn stalks out. And those pansies will provide color in the middle of your yard all fall, all winter, and all spring until you're ready to put more corn in. And that's naturally when the pansies start to play out.
Oh, wow. That's definitely something I would never have thought of.
I'm surprised I did. I think they changed my medication or something. And obviously, you can plant it doesn't even have to be shallow rooted shrub. One thing that comes to mind, again, make the box really big to cover a large area and put a good size forsythia in the middle of that. Nothing grows faster than forsythia. You get this amazing burst of yellow color in the spring that attracts pollinators, and the spring tiptheia wasp. that feeds on the pollen and nectar from the plants and then goes into your lawn and looks for Japanese beetle grubs to parasitize. And then the plants, then the plant stays green all the rest of the time. Forsythia can easily grow 10 feet tall in a season. If you just watch the roots down there, it won't spread into your lawn. And once it establishes itself in size, you may find yourself pruning it so it doesn't get too big. But it would provide shade all year long, or as soon as the you could be cutting it back, especially if you didn't really care for the flowers, but you would care for the flowers. And that's something that would grow really fast and provide the shade you need and some added benefits. So, and there are probably trees, small dwarf trees that could go in there, but you're not going to replace anything that's going to be 20, 30 feet tall. For that, you'd have to get the stump pulled.
Right.
And you'd have to make sure it there's no water lines or anything like that under there.
Right. We did have them check that before they ground the stump. They went down about 15 inches.
That's not the worst, so, but like I said, I would build a box and make it like a foot and a half high and fill that with really good soil, and then you should defeat the action of the stump. I would go wild and swing for the fences, especially if you say the area gets lots of sun.
It does.
There are some sweet corn varieties, for instance. There's one called Platinum Lady. That has purple stalks, purple leaves, and purple pollen. And because you'd plant it fresh every season, you could grow a different kind of crazy corn. You could grow what people call Indian corn, the multicolored corns for drying and decoration. It would be so much fun, and you'd get your summer shade. The corn would be at its tallest at the hottest time in the summer.
I never really thought of it providing shade.
But oh, yeah.
They could go 10 feet tall.
That's why they cut the corn mazes out of them. You can't see over the top. All right?
Yeah.
So there's some.
Okay, well,
there's
thank you.
There's the crazy idea of the day.
Right. Well, super. I sure appreciate your help, Mike.
All right. Good luck, Susan.
Okay, thank you. Love your show.
Thank you. Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Gary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing, Mike?
I am just ducky today, Gary. How are you, sir?
Peachy creamy.
All right. And where is Gary Peachy?
I'm in Ocean City, New Jersey.
Excellent. Excellent. What can we do for Gary in Ocean City?
Well, Mike, I got a problem. I got kind of two questions for you. Both deal with squirrels.
Evil squirrels, Gary. Get the name right.
Evil squirrels. Yes, sir. You hit that nail right on the head there. And I've tried a number of things to deter them. And I had a standoff the other day in the driveway with one. He stood up like he was a brown bear.
What are the squirrels specifically doing, the evil squirrels?
You know, they're getting the fruit before I do. Let it be tomatoes or figs. Right when the fruit gets ripe, they know what day to go there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They don't even like tomatoes, but you'll notice they take a bite out of each one just to frustrate us. They have nothing better to do with their time. There's two ways to protect crops, like especially tomatoes. One of the reasons I grow my tomatoes inside cages of welded wire animal fencing is if the evil squirrels are especially frisky that year, I can make a little top for the cage and twist tie it on, and then they can't get at the tomatoes inside. And if you do it correctly, all the directions are at our website under the A to Z Garden Answers thing under tomatoes, tomato caging. They can't get at them, and it's wonderfully frustrating. But if everything's in a relatively confined area, you can buy a motion-activated sprinkler pointed at the area, and as soon as the evil squirrels jump in, you know, they make a lot of movement, it'll turn the sprinkler on and they'll get soaked with cold water and they'll run away, which is also very emotionally satisfying for us. If squirrels in general are a problem, make sure you don't have any bird feeders outside. Birds don't need to be fed seed, but it attracts squirrels and feeds them, and they get really rambunctious. If any of your neighbors have bird feeders, or even worse, are putting out food for the squirrels, then you got to talk to them. But if you don't have any bird feeders or food out and you protect all your stuff, hopefully they will stop tormenting you. But they are absolutely evil, Gary. They have nothing better to do with their time. It takes a squirrel about 45 seconds to attend to all its needs during the day. And they spend the rest of the day figuring new ways to torment us. So don't put out any bird feeders. Don't put out anything that could be supplemental food for them. Protect your crop area with motion-activated sprinklers. And light a candle to the Blessed Mother, because these creatures are evil.
Oh, amen.
Good luck, sir.
Mike, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Have a great day.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will get you ready to achieve compost success this fall at the Lower Makefield Township building at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 28th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with Seedy Weeds and more of your seedy phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia, beginning our 20th year on the air with this very show. Coming up later in the show, how to take care of garden weeds that have gone to seed, a problem many of you are facing. But first, lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Scott, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today. Scott, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
And where is Scott doing great?
I am doing great in Piedmont, Oklahoma.
Oh, so Piedmont is actually the name of a town in Oklahoma, but you're not in the Piedmont.
No. No.
The Piedmont is that area between the ocean and the mountains in part of the northeast part of the country.
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right, what can we do for Scott in a confusingly named area?
Well, I'm having a problem with my flower garden that's attached to my front porch. It's nothing but clay soil under there, and me and my wife are having a hard time trying to get the flowers and shrubs to stay alive.
Oh, yeah, and Where are you in relation to, like, Oklahoma City and Norman and those places?
We are just west of Oklahoma City.
Okay. Obviously, you know, I've been out there a lot. You great listeners. A very difficult growing area, which may be why we have so many dedicated listeners. You know, it's not just the clay, man. Your soil is alkaline. Your water is alkaline. Your winds are hellish. You know, the devil once visited Oklahoma City and said, this wind is too much for me, you know.
Absolutely.
So how big an area are we talking about?
It's probably about 3 foot by 8 to 10.
Oh, can of corn. Easy catch, man.
All right.
In the fall, if it, you know, when it's nice and dry, rototill that area, break up the clay as best you can, and then frame out the entire area. I'm going to suggest pavers for an area that size. I can't see your house, but I can tell this is going to look amazing already.
Yes.
Level the clay area. Lay down single sheets of cardboard over top of the clay. This is just to prevent any weeds from sprouting from the tilled up soil. You can also, if you're a young man and you're up to this, you can double dig that soil. You just get a garden fork and you keep removing a lane at a time and loosening it up. Once the cardboard decays, it'll be good for the root system of the plants. But you're going to build up, you're going to build up an area about a foot high with pavers, and then you're going to fill that, quote, box, I guess you'd call it, the raised bed, with a 50-50 mix of yard waste compost and good quality black topsoil. That means it's black when it's dry. You never buy topsoil wet. You always take some home and let it dry in the sun, which in parts of your summer will take about 20 minutes. And if it's still black when it's dry, it's good stuff. If it's tan or brown when it's dry, then it's the same stuff you're trying to replace. Once you avoid that native soil, anything you plant in there is going to grow like crazy. Then the only thing you have to do every year is top that bed off with an inch or two of fresh compost. The plants will plants will absolutely grow themselves, man.
Okay, thank you so much, Mike.
All right, Scott, good luck, sir.
Thank you, sir.
1-888-346-9499. Bob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Bob.
Okay. I've got a question about my pawpaw tree.
Excellent. Where are you, Bob?
I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio.
I think you are right in the heart of pawpaw growing region. We had an author on the show a while ago, and we just revisited this in a question of the week, but he had a great range map where the pawpaw was native, and I think Cincinnati was right in the middle, man.
Yeah, that's what I understand after the fact, so that's good.
Okay, so what's going on?
Well, I've got, the tree is relatively new. It got planted maybe 3 months ago.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, no. Ding, ding, ding. In the middle of the summer?
Yeah.
Okay, that's why it's dead.
Well, I asked the guy, I said, how come you're planting it now? And he said, aren't you supposed to plant it in the fall? I mean, I don't know much, but I figured that's where you plant, I think. In any case, so he said, I don't care, as I've guaranteed it, but as long as you water it and make sure you water it once a week and give it a soaking for several hours, you'll be okay.
That's not the worst advice, but it is the worst time of year to plant anything that you're hoping will be perennial. Now, I presume this thing, I'm going to guess the leaves have all fallen off. They're a ghastly color. It's got X's over its eyes.
Well, it's not that bad. I think the patient isn't on the stretcher yet. The leaves are still on, but they're all yellow. A few have fallen. The top leaves are still green.
Okay.
And so there's, I think, some life in it.
Yeah, these things, however, these things do die from the bottom up sometimes, or mostly even.
Oh.
Okay, so here's the deal. Fall would have been a great time to plant. Spring would have been a great time to plant. Even though it seems weird, the dead of winter would have been a great time to plant as long as the soil wasn't frozen hard. There's some things you can get away with in summer, like a late run of string beans or something like that. But any kind of perennial, it's better to even keep the plant in the pot. where you can move it into dappled shade and keep it watered and baby it and then plant it around this time of year. So you're saying the guy guaranteed it. Have you told him? Have you taken pictures?
I haven't taken pictures. I told him about it, and I said, you sure? I mean, is it too much water? Is it not enough water?
It's certainly not too much water.
Yeah, and so he said, no, go ahead. It'll be fine. It's turning yellow because it's fall, and just keep watering it as you're doing once a week. And so he wasn't concerned.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. Again, anytime you put something in summer like that, and I presume he planted it first thing in the morning, so it got the maximum amount of heat stress that day.
There was a lot of heat around. It was in the afternoon.
Yeah, see.
Two or three-ish.
Well, better than first thing in the morning. But what happens, you know, these plants, they're already going to go through transplant shock, and then it's incredibly hot and dry. It is very stressful for them. Now, you've been giving it what it sounds like an inch of water. You've been letting a hose drip at the base for a couple of hours once a week?
Right. A very slow dribble, but maybe 3 or 4 hours.
Okay, that is good advice for any plant during a hot and dry summertime. I probably would have told you, if you really were going to do this risky thing, to do that twice a week. But you can't go back in time. And these are what are called river trees. It's really hard to overwater one of these things, unless it's in a pot with no drainage. So continue that watering. Every week we don't get rain until the temperatures, the nighttime temperatures drop into the 40s. Then you can back off a little bit. And in the spring, we'll tell the tale. If new green leaves came out, the tree survived, and it should bear fruit for you, you know, in a couple of years, not right away. And if in the spring it's still dead, you make sure he understands that we're going to wait that long, and the guarantee is still good if it doesn't leaf out in the spring.
Okay. I've got it. Do I have time for another question about the pawpaw?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I then found out that there's a male and a female.
No, close, no, but you need two varieties to get fruit. You need two trees, and they need to be different varieties. So one pawpaw will give you an interesting-looking tree. Two pawpaws that are guaranteed to be two different varieties will eventually give you fruit. But it's not a male-female kind of thing. It's just basic cross-pollination in the fruit.
Cross-pollination.
Okay?
Okay, well, that was my second question. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, Bob.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Nicole, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. Excited to talk to you.
I'm excited to talk to you, Nicole. Where are you?
I'm in Pennsburg, Pennsylvania.
I know exactly where it is.
Oh.
East Greenville is to your north. And
correct.
If you go a little bit south down Route 29, you end up in Green Lane, which has a wonderful, gigantic park system with a dam and a reservoir. I was there not long ago, and the turtles were basking in the sun on the rocks in the stream. It's a great area.
Yeah, I love living here. It's really wonderful. We're lucky.
What can we do for Nicole in Pennsburg?
Well, I have heritage raspberries that I planted about 7 years ago. I started with 5 canes, have a really nice long line of them now. And they're beautiful, and they're doing great, and I love them, and I get a tremendous amount of raspberries. But last 2 years, a little bit of fruit flies last year, but it was nothing that I couldn't work around, not a big deal, wasn't concerned. This year,
let me stop you. Do you get little worms in the fruits?
Yes, at the tip.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. No, I'm sorry. The reason we haven't done a question of the week on this pest is, one, because it's kind of new. You're at the epicenter of it. I have a farmer friend who lives in Veracruz. They've wiped it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is not far from you.
Yeah.
They've wiped out his crops. They're devastating. It's a pest called the spotted wing, and I hope I'm going to pronounce this correctly, Drosophila, but it is a fruit fly. it is a new imported invasive insect, and it is a bear to control. Now, let's just drop back. You okay. say you're heritage. I have heritage raspberries. Mm-hmm. I have not been affected.
Oh, lucky.
Yeah, knock on my head, because I'm right in between you guys. Now, you say your raspberries are growing in a long line. You must be, are you pruning them or mowing them or something?
No, they're about a 3-foot deep row that I have, and, well, they do, there is grass then that goes up to them, and yeah, we mow over the little guys that try to meander into the lawn.
Right, because for people mm-hmm. who've never had the pleasure, raspberries send up new canes in the spring, and they go all over the place. You know, you can't grow them in an area where you want things controlled, but if you've got a big open area, they're the best plant going. Now, you say the edge has a lawn. Are you treating the lawn, or are you feeding the lawn?
No, we don't use anything. I forbid my husband to spray or use chemicals.
Well, that's in one sense. Well, I mean, but you don't use any lawn fertilizer.
No, right.
Yeah, darn. Because if you did, that would be feeding the raspberries, and that attracts these kind of pests. You don't.
Oh, okay.
So you don't feed the berries anything either.
I don't. Although this spring, I have compost, a little compost bin, and I don't feed them normally, but this spring I threw a couple shovels of compost on them, but that was it.
And the compost was completely finished. Do you put food waste in your composter?
I do.
Okay, stop.
But
stop.
Nice and black.
Stop doing that. Stop doing that.
Get
yourself a worm bin for indoors and use that to compost your food waste. This fall, make your compost only shredded leaves. And if you if you want to add something, make it coffee grounds. There's a million coffee shops right near you. Tell them you'd like their grounds for a couple of weeks in the fall as you're collecting and shredding your leaves. Run your food waste inside, because if your compost doesn't heat up enough and there's any fruit fly larva in any of the old fruit you throw out, you could be breeding them.
Yeah, you know what? I think maybe I am, because I have noticed fruit flies near the compost, but I thought they were coming from the raspberries because they're not that far apart.
You want to try everything you can do here.
Okay.
And for instance, in my own home, my open piles are only shredded leaves and coffee grounds. Anytime I have food waste, I try to run it all through my worm bin. If I have too much, then it goes into sealed composters outside.
Okay.
But you got, if you're going to use food waste, especially fruit waste in your situation, it has to be composted hot or run through a worm bin, and that should make it safe. And if you see fruit flies, just take the compost and throw it in the woods.
Okay.
Don't think twice. They are difficult to control. We have not yet established a control. Mm-hmm. Chemicals don't work against them. And you really can't spray the plants with anything that's effective against them, because the plants flower constantly, and anything that would kill the fruit flies is going to make the flowers toxic to bees. So, because there are organic controls that could be sprayed, but anything that kills a fruit fly is going to harm a bee. So, and you've got flowers that need to be pollinated.
Yep.
So here's what we're going to do. This spring, as soon as you see flowers, I want you to get big bottles of white vinegar, big gallon jugs, and make fruit fly traps. Put out little saucers of white vinegar all throughout your garden. They'll fly into the vinegar and it kills them. Get some cheap red wine, and I mean, $2 chuck here. We're, wine in a box. And do the same thing with that. Red wine, a very thin layer in like a little saucer or, Chinese takeout quarter pint kind of thing is very effective. I've put this out when I've had fruit fly problems in my kitchen. And the next morning, the little glass with like one finger of red wine in it is totally covered.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like a pool cover. The only thing that I can think of or suggest is red wine traps and vinegar traps. And if the problem persists, what you're going to have to do is cut everything back and don't let anything really grow for a year and then try it again. My farmer friend just had to go without raspberries for a year and then start over. But, I mean, all of us who grow raspberries, especially in this part of Pennsylvania, We're always terrified we're going to find worms in the berries, and you didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, okay.
All right?
Yeah. Oh, thanks so much. I will definitely. Do you think it would be worth in the first crop that comes off, maybe just cutting off those heads and not providing?
No, the first crop is the best crop.
Yeah. Okay.
So just do everything you can. No more compost from fruit waste, and put out the traps, and you know, light a candle to the Blessed Mother. This is a tough pest.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Good luck, Nicole.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will deliver the keynote address at the Phipps Conservatory and Botanic Gardens in Pittsburgh's annual Native Plant and Sustainability Conference on Saturday, October 14th. And I'll host the Empty Bowl Dinner to benefit homeless families on Wednesday evening, November 15th, at the Lutheran Theological Seminary on Germantown Avenue in Philadelphia. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with CD Wheaties and more of your CD phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens, celebrating 19 years on the air by doing what we always do, taking your fabulous phone calls and delivering a detailed question of the week. This week, telling you how to safely get rid of weeds that have gone to seed, as has this show. But back to those fabulous phone calls before we get to that. 1-888-346-9499. Lynn, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for making it, Lynn. Where are you?
In Hockessin, Delaware.
Very good. What can we do for Lynn in Hockessin?
You can help me a lot. I have a huge thistle problem.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lynn. We're out of time this week. We have to go. It's been great talking to you.
It's that bad, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I've got at least 500, and we've tried over the years to do a lot of different things that different services and different people told us to do, and
We're
just overrun. It's all over our property. Every time I spray, if I spray it, I lose other flowers, And if I cut them down and keep cutting them down, they grow back with a vengeance.
And when you spray, you may lose months off your own life.
Yeah, that's true.
I have never seen a case where herbicides were the answer to weed problems. They're just something that's been well marketed. And if you go into a store that sells herbicides and you say, I have a weed problem, they're going to sell you an herbicide. That's what they're there for.
Yes.
They're not interested.
I had one service tell me that I should just spray everything, kill everything, and start from scratch with grass.
Yes, and that's what plant lovers will always do. Here's the thing. First of all, now you have to admit the flowers are beautiful.
Yes.
You attract millions of goldfinches, I suggest, who are coming to eat the thistle seed because that's
I haven't seen any finches.
Oh, you're getting robbed then. Maybe that's because you keep cutting them down before the seeds dry and the birds come. The problem is this is an underground root system that's much like bamboo. The tops of the plants are the tips of the iceberg. Underground, if you dig up an area, you're going to find a massive web of roots that is always trying to creep outward. So the first thing you want to do where it's really coming into unwanted areas is you either want to do this yourself or you want to hire a landscaper to install really strong edging, really like the rhizome barrier that's used to contain running bamboo along the edge of the lawn, especially, and then along the edges of the flower beds. And then
wow.
On the leeward side, so to speak, on the good side of the barrier, any thistle that you see, my first recommendation would be as soon as it appears in the spring to use a flame weeder on it. You can go online and buy very inexpensive propane-powered flame weeders. And when the plants are small, they're very vulnerable. So you can go out there and toast the suckers. And you do this while you're standing up and you're not spraying any chemicals. And then the long-term answer to the rest of the property, and it's very labor-intensive, is to take defined areas, let the plants grow to a certain size, and then cut them. Don't pull them. My understanding is pulling may stimulate some sort of hormone that generates excessive new growth. But clip it off close to the soil line, and then whenever the plant regrows to, say, a foot tall, you do it again. And that's, you know, that's we call that the rope-a-dope method. And you gradually exhaust the root system underground. The other thing you could do, if it's possible with the landscape and the area in question, is to solarize the soil. You would get something like a brush cutter that would skim the surface of the soil and cut all of the plants down to the soil line, really scalp it. And then ideally you would have the area tilled up and leveled and then saturate it with water to the point where it can't hold water anymore. Stretch clear plastic over top for an entire summer, and that will cook not only the thistle roots but any weed seeds and diseases that are in the soil. Then that would be fresh for you to start with.
Right, and that would also get rid of all the other plants that I have, right?
Exactly. There's no way to solarize, you know, and keep a tree in the middle. It would just heat up the surrounding soil too much for the tree. Herbicides won't touch these plants because they can't get down to the root system, and you really don't want to use the kind of herbicides that are systemic. You'll just wind up devastating the area of wildlife and wanted plants. So maybe hire somebody for a summer to come in and do the repeated cutting. A summer's worth of repeated cutting will take about half the strength out of the root system, and then the second summer will either finish it off or what comes up the third year will be so weak you can just flame them. And
oh wow.
But that's what you do, is you force the roots to use up all their energy and you never give them a lot of leaf structure to refuel.
Okay. Wow. You've given me a lot here. I appreciate this so much.
All right. My pleasure, Lynn. Good luck.
Thank you. You have a good day.
You too.
Okay, bye.
1-888-346-9499. Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. Pat.
Yes, hello.
Hello,
thanks
Pat.
Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Pat. Where are you?
I'm in Princeton, New Jersey.
Excellent. What can we do for Pat in Princeton?
Well, I just relocated to a townhouse, and I'm parking my car in the driveway, and there is a beautiful, mature linden tree on my lawn. and the branches are extending over the driveway somewhat. And I'm only here since the end of July, but I started to notice that the car was sticky. And it started to get very dirty. And one day I went out and the roof was covered with horse flies. There must have been 10 or 15 of them. There were a few hornets. There was a wasp. So it seemed like they were eating whatever it was that was gathering on the car.
Uh-huh.
So I did some research, and we looked at one of the branches, and it seems that we have aphids.
You are correct.
And what they described, these droppings, it's aphid honeydew.
And I'll stop you right there, because
yes.
I love these euphemisms of entomology. Back in August, I went to the Philly Folk Festival, where I've been going since 1970. And you're camping out in an open field, and there's no electricity or running water. You use porta-potties. And these kids today don't understand what the honey truck is. The honey truck is the truck that services those porta-potties.
Mm-hmm.
So honeydew is more like honey don't.
Right. Well,
the polite word an entomologist would also use would be frass, F-R-A-S-S, and that's a $20 word that means bug poop.
Yeah, right, exactly. So my question is, the leaves are starting to fall off the tree, so I assume that will solve the aphid problem for now.
Correct.
But what do I do in the spring? I also know that there's some kind of a soil injection treatment.
Oh, God, no. No, no, you'll kill a million bees.
Oh, wow.
Anything systemic that gets into the soil will immediately go to any flowers the plant forms, whether we see those flowers or not. And there was a terrifying article, I forget what area of the country it was out of, but suddenly there were like 50,000 dead bumblebees in a parking lot of a big box store. And they found out that some landscape company had injected the soil around all the trees for this very cause, to prevent aphids. And then bumblebees had come to feed on the flowers and, you know, pollinators beyond belief were wiped out. You can't use these things. There's always collateral damage, and you don't have to turn to anything like that. Now, first, you do have a job right now. You got to get that car washed and keep it washed.
Well, I did it myself because I don't like going through the car wash with me sitting in it, but I'm going to have to do it again.
The basic line on that is 24 hours, it's easy. After 24 hours, it's hard.
Yeah, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, a couple of things. First, this winter, what would it look like if you had the tree pruned where it overhangs the driveway?
Well, that's a problem because I belong to a condo association. So everything has to be approved. And I know there is a plan for pruning, but I don't know exactly what it is. I could find out.
Well, you should. I always get disturbed when people tell me they don't have control over their landscape. But that would be the ideal solution to buy some time, at least, or not to have it drop on the car, is to prune the branches on that side of the driveway. And no matter what anybody tells you, that could not be done now. That could severely damage the tree by causing new growth right before winter arrives.
Right.
The best time to do that is in the dead of winter or early spring. Do you have control over your lawn? Do they put herbicides and chemicals and fertilizers on your lawn?
I'm not quite sure, to tell you the truth.
Okay, you got to investigate that, because if they're fertilizing the lawn with high-strength chemicals, that's causing the aphids to appear.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Aphids generally go after stressed trees. So removing the stress of that chemical fertilizer that's affecting the tree, making it grow faster, lusher, abnormally fast, that'll get rid of the aphids. And if everybody in this area has aphids and their lawns are being cared for the same, you got to talk them into just even just reducing the strength of the fertilizer. It's too strong, and the trees are the indicator of that. The easiest way to get rid of aphids is to get a pressure washer and just spray them out of the tree early in the season as soon as they appear. You just keep blasting them out of the tree early, and they'll just go away. The ones that get flung out of the tree die. The others get so depressed they don't come back. You can also, which is really cool, you can mail order ladybugs and lacewings, beneficial insects that prey on the aphids, release those under the tree in the evening on a wet surface, and they will stay there, and they'll go up into the tree, and they'll eat those aphids for you.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Good luck, Pat.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Controlling weeds that have gone to seed. Alexis Landis, producer of that CD show, You Bet Your Garden, please get us started with this week's question.
I'd be happy to, Mike. Kat in Leesburg, Virginia writes, I'm looking for advice on how to get an area of my garden back under control without using chemicals. I failed to keep up with the weeding in a section of my vegetable garden that is about 15 by 30 feet. It had crabgrass, clover, and a few other weeds that went to seed. I ripped them all out as best I could, but can't get all the roots out. And I can see that a lot of seed is scattered on the surface of the soil. I wonder if covering the area with impermeable black plastic until next May would kill everything. Or maybe it makes things worse by keeping the area warm enough for the weeds to survive the winter. Mike, this is far from the easiest question you've had to answer.
Yeah, vacation time is officially over. Everybody out of the pool! Hey, you with the Madras sneakers, come out with your hands up.
Let's start with the black plastic idea.
Wishful thinking. Weeds need no help surviving the winter, and only clear plastic that stretched tight over a perfectly prepared area for an entire summer can kill weed seeds. It's called soil solarization, and this description of the proper technique is not my opinion. It's the only way the diligent researchers got it to work. Her best bet now is to use a flame weeder, a handheld propane-powered garden torch that shoots a small flame out the business end of a long shepherd's hook-like wand. Use it to slowly toast one small section of the infested area at a time, preferably on a hot day when that soil is bone dry. It's much less work than any kind of plastic. You get to stay upright while you deactivate those weed seeds, and every little pop you hear is an emotionally satisfying sign that you're doing it right.
You've always been emotionally satisfied by your flame weeder.
Mom said it was okay to be easy, just not cheap.
Ugh, I am so not going there. What about those roots still in the ground?
You know, it sounds like Kat had a typical round of frantic but useless pulling. I suggest she let those roots re-sprout. And when they're tall enough, soak the soil thoroughly and pull gently at their base. And be sure to compost those pulled roots with lots of soil still attached. They're full in nutrients, and they're the perfect green material to mix with the shredded fall leaves that will soon be abundant. No matter what, this is the best way to handle weeds of almost any size. Soak the soil for hours, really saturate it, and then pull low and slow. Get down to where the plant meets the soil line and pull slowly and gently. That's the only way you can get those roots out the first time. Angry yanking may seem emotionally satisfying, but it doesn't get the job done. And it does tend to be the panicked tactic of choice for large areas that seem insurmountable. Better to slow down and spread the job out over a week or so. An hour a day of doing it right in small area after small area gets rid of those weeds without you needing a corner man.
Ugh, the show needs a translator. Hey, why did you say weeds of almost any size?
As Kat discovered, yanking weeds that have already gone to seed just spreads those seeds. When weeds are seedy, don't pull right away. Instead, use that flame weeder to incinerate the tops of the plants. Then run the flame up and down the sides of the plants, any place you see seed pods. The torch will toast those seeds, and you can then pull out the plants without planting next year's crop of weeds. Bonus, many weed seeds look like munchkin fireworks when they pop.
You know, the words easily amused frequently come to mind when I work with you.
Saves me a fortune on my cable bill. Anyway, next season, delay planting those areas until any missed weed seeds have germinated and they've been growing for about 2 weeks. Then carefully and methodically slice them off at the soil line with a hoe that has a super sharp blade, like a diamond hoe.
Ah, creating what's known as a stale seed bed.
Exactly. And whatever you do, don't till that soil. Tilling plants weed seeds.
You know, the way she describes this area, I have to assume that it's a flat earth garden, a design or lack of design that guarantees maximum weed woes.
My thoughts exactly. You get a lot more eaten with a lot less weeding from raised beds. Now, 4x8 is the ideal size for each bed with 2-foot-wide walking lanes in between. And because you build the growing area up to a foot above the soil line, grassy weeds like the clover and crabgrass she specifically names can't migrate in from the outside. And you can just mow the actual lanes to keep those weeds under control. There's no pulling at all.
And the cool air of fall is perfect for getting outside and doing some raised bed building. And if you build those beds now, they'll be ready to plant in the spring.
Hint, hint. Well, that sure was some fiery advice about late-season weed woes now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, with links to lots of articles about raised bed building, click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to fire extinguish my flaming weeds. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org.
Please, please include your location.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you will find the answers to all those garden questions you were going to send us, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. We continue to send get well wishes to Elizabeth Perez Luna, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter continues to play our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website weed free. Alexis Raised Bed Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY FM in Philadelphia. Our flaming editor is Al Banks. Our brand new intern, Robert Fogarty, is wearing a tie. Associate producer Brett Rader wants a flame weeder and a cap gun and lawn darts. I'm your weed roasting host, Mike McGrath, and I'll be out in the garden playing Snap, Crackle, Pop Weed Krispies until I see you again next week. Are bleeding oaks some sort of sign or just a miserable driveway mess? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal the surprising causes of excessive sap that are exclusive to oaks. Plus your sappy phone calls.